You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to this edition of OK Boomer with my co-host Victoria Greenwood. We have a special guest I will get to in a second. But I don't think we paid enough props to our sponsor last week. Angela Marsden, the owner of the Pineapple Hill Saloon, graciously sponsors our show. And we really want you all, now that we are opening tomorrow, June the 19th, or whatever today is,
15th. It's the 15th.
June 15th. I don't know. It's been this like for a year.
Yep.
Travel over, belly up to the bar, get a hamburger, fries. Don't go to In-N-Out Burger. Go into the Pineapple Hill Saloon. Get some cocktails. Everybody there is anxious to see you all back. Spend your money. Support them. They support us. So, I have a guest in studio tonight. He's a big mucky muck from Hollywood, Frank DeMartini. He's also from New York, and he's a Mets fan. However, sometime through this show, I am going to point out the 6 degrees of separation between Victoria Greenwood and Frank DeMartini, because I went through my 6 degrees with Victoria Greenwood.
Dude, we already know there's only one. If she knows Jay and I know Jay, story over.
See, that's what happens. I mean, that's what happens when you assume Mr. DeMartini.
Yeah, there may be more than one.
No, it's actually a bigger one and a more fascinating one, which we will get to.
Can't
so,
wait.
Frank, did you? You're from Long Island, correct?
Correct.
You didn't start out in the movie business, did you?
Yeah, when I came out to California, I came out as an entertainment lawyer.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Actually, I started as a tax lawyer, but with a specialty in entertainment tax.
Okay. And then how'd you get into producing? Because you produced some really cool films.
Yeah, I've made about 20 movies. How did I get into producing? All my clients were directors, writers, actors. And I put deals together for people. And once you learn how to put deals together, you know how to produce.
Okay.
Well, that's cool.
It's that simple.
Yeah, right? I was like, wow, I didn't know that.
Victoria, why haven't you done this yet?
I mean, technically, I did produce a short film with you, Ralph, but I have I know nothing about putting deals together. So joke's on you, really.
But you know, we were talking about it. The industry's changed a lot, though. You can't structure deals the same way, correct? Because of the money factor.
Well, no, you still, it's basically all the same. The only difference is the sales are being made to different avenues. I mean, in the 80s, we were selling everything to video. Then it became DVD, and now it's streamers. You're still selling the rights and splitting up the rights.
But how do you raise the capital, though, for the production?
By selling the rights.
So that has not changed at all?
No. So basically, you find a script you like, you creatively package it, and then you go to foreign sales companies and domestic sales companies and try to get someone to pay for it.
Because I was under the understanding that the tax laws have changed so dramatically that money kind of is frozen.
No. Tax laws really have nothing to do with financing a movie unless you're specifically taking advantage of Section 168K of the IRS code, or you're taking advantage of Oklahoma, Georgia, or Louisiana tax credits. But those haven't really changed. I mean, the Georgia.
What about foreign?
Foreign, you just sell the rights.
Okay, so their tax laws haven't changed and their money hasn't changed?
Well, the German money's gone.
Okay.
But the German money was just a piece of the pie. And the German money was basically, once the German tax credits disappeared, then all of a sudden China opened up and everybody went to China, which is definitely a big, in my opinion, a mistake because of the political ramifications of it. But we're not supposed to talk politics on this show, right?
No, you can talk politics. You can talk anything you want on this show. This is OK Boomer. And by the way, when you say about the political ramifications of it, in Top Gun 2, because a buddy of mine, Bob Stevenson, is in Top Gun 2, which one day will get released.
I think it's coming out in August or September.
We'll see about that. They had to remove certain patches from Tom Cruise's jacket, any of the Taiwan patches or anything like that, because China did not want to see any of those patches on the jacket.
Well, you saw what happened with John, was it John Cena, about 2 weeks ago?
Oh, the apology in Chinese?
Where he had to apologize for saying that Taiwan was a country.
Yeah.
Or the movie, they would have pulled the release of the movie from China.
That's a lot.
I mean,
that's like
I
could.
In order to sell the Chinese rights for Mechanic, we had to get the script approved by the Chinese censors first. And we had to put Michelle Yeoh in the picture.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it the same way with The Expendables?
Yeah. That's why Jet Li was in the movies.
Oh, I know your degree is now.
Ah!
You wanna, I remembered.
You want to give away the goose? Go ahead.
Avi Lerner.
Oh, you know Avi?
I know. I've known Avi since I was a little kid.
She used to live at his house.
I did. Blue Jay Way.
Oh, you lived on Blue Jay Way?
Yeah, it was.
I went to a lot of parties on Blue Jay Way.
Yeah, him and my mom are very good friends. My mom worked for him for a long time and would help read scripts. Her name is Sheila Lucier.
I don't know her.
Yeah, so he let us live in his house for a period of time, and I went to school over there. Except then my mom and me go to private school because I got jumped.
What?
Yeah, that's what happens.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Absolutely. School.
Which school?
Whatever public school is the closest one there. And it, you would think it would be, my mom thought it would be a good school. It was not.
Probably the closest middle school.
He sold that house probably like 20 years ago.
I mean, I'm 31. So, yeah. The last time I was there, I was like in the third or fourth grade.
Now, did he know your mom from South Africa or did he know her from here?
He knows her from here. I don't know. You'd have to ask her.
Is she
like,
Israeli?
No. My mom's American, but she's like blonde and I forget. I don't even know how they know each other, but.
Know each other pretty well if you were living in his house.
Yeah. I mean, Avi, she used to read movies and help do like castings and stuff. And I know he also, I say he's like my godfather, but Gino Havens was like a casting director that he used a lot for different movies and things.
So you're going back to like the real old days.
Yeah. Gino was like, yeah, I was raised with Gino being like my godfather.
I mean, I go back with Avi to like South Africa.
Okay.
I've known him since, you know, actually I met him on the second New Image movie, but I was involved with some of the movies, the canon movies in South Africa that he was involved in.
Okay.
But I didn't meet him until they came here.
Yeah. My mom has lots. I mean, I feel like I never remember anything and she remembers everything. So it's very different. She like made a joke about when he was doing The Wicker Man, like why he didn't cast, like, cause my whole family's blonde. She's like, you could have used my whole family as extras. What are you doing?
That's right.
Yeah.
That movie was a long, but that movie shot in Vancouver.
Yeah. I think that was his excuse.
That was somewhere around 15, 17 years ago.
Okay.
So you were 14.
Something like that. I don't know.
Who directed Wicker Man?
German guy, the big German art director.
I like that movie.
Not too many people did.
I did.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
What the heck is his name? He's the very. He's a very famous German art director, and I'm blanking on his name.
Because you were with Avi for many years.
I told you, I was involved in the second movie New Image made. Yeah. The second movie New Image made was a movie called Cyborg Cop that was directed by Sam Furstenberg. He was my client. David Bradley was my client. The writer Rami Alon was my client. And I knew Boaz Davidson and Sam from the end of the canon days.
Okay.
So when they were making American Ninja, American Ninja 2, that's when I was like a 24, 25-year-old just out of law school.
Wow.
And they were like my first clients in the entertainment industry. Sam Furstenberg was my first client in the entertainment industry. So I go back kind of to like even the DVD days.
I mean,
the video days, the VHS days.
So what came first, New Image or Millennium?
Millennium was the big budget branch of New Image. New Image started in 1991. The first movie was a movie called Little Ninja. Actually, it was the third movie I was involved in. The second movie was a movie called Women of Desire that Jack Gilardi put together with Robert Ginty was the director and Bo Derek was the star. The third movie was Cyborg Cop. And then they signed a three-picture deal with David Bradley, who is my client. He made Cyborg Cop 1, Cyborg Cop 2, and another movie called Blood Run, where he got into a fight with Danny Dimbort and destroyed one of the props, and then Danny Dimbort said, I'm never working with this guy again. That was like 94, 95. And then they made a three-picture deal with Frank Zagarino, who is also my client. So, and then around 1997, they created Millennium, which was a partnership between Avi, Elie Samaha, and what the heck is his name? The Israeli guy who used to own Live. I'm blanking on his name.
Meacham.
Not Arnon Milchan. Okay, Arnon Milchan owned New Regency. Okay. It was the Israeli guy that owned Live. And they each owned a third of Millennium. It was a third New Image, a third Ely's company, and a third Arnon Milchan.
Was that before Ely started Franchise Pictures?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there was this dispute between the three partners, and Avi just bought them all out. And then Ely started Franchise.
Okay. Wow, that is going back to the beginning.
And Millennium, for a long time, made the bigger budget New Image movies. And New Image made the direct-to-video smaller budget movies.
Okay. So it was like two separate DBAs under one major...
Right. Right. And then I started producing in 97. And I made my first movie with another Israeli named Ami Artzi. He financed it. And then I got Avi to finance my second movie because I got Eric Roberts in it.
Which one was that?
It was a movie called The Alternate with Eric Roberts, Michael Madsen. And that was such a successful production. It was one of the few movies they ever did in Los Angeles that they hired me then to do Crocodile and Spiders. Danny Dimbort was... We could have a ball just talking about New Image now. Only the stuff I can talk about. Danny Dimbort went to the AFM, this is like 98, and started asking buyers, what kind of movies do you want? We finance, and the Japanese buyer said, we want a movie with giant creatures. And Danny said, how big? And they, big, I want big. And they kept getting bigger, and finally he goes, well, how much will you give me if I give you a giant spider? And he goes, I give you $1 million. Now, we got $1 million from Japan for a giant spider movie. We got $1.25 million for a giant crocodile movie, and that's just one territory. So, I mean, we were making movies. We made those two movies. Crocodile was made for 2.8. Spiders was made for 2.4. Wow. You can't make schlocky B movies for that budget anymore. Those movies are being made for $400,000 or $500,000 now. I mean, we shot Crocodile for 42 days. That's like a big movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
42 days is a...
And then IATSE came, and we were up in the valley and shut us down. And Avi said, I'm not giving the union a dime. So instead of signing with the union, we shut the movie down and moved to Mexico. We went to... we found a lake in the Sonoran Desert. And we shot the last 3 weeks of the movie in the middle of Mexico, in the middle of August, about 110 miles south of Tucson, in 120 degree heat.
Wow. That's pretty wild. And then I met you when you were, you don't remember me at the time, but because I was better friends with Jim, but when you guys were doing Mad Money.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Because I was hanging out.
Did I meet you on Journey to the End of the Night before that?
No. Mad Money was the first time I met you.
In Shreveport? You came to Shreveport?
No, it was during the production, during the time of it. I had to stop over, I think it was at Millennium or something. I had to bring something to Jim, and Jim introduced us.
Yeah, what happened was me and Boaz were trying to put together a movie with Josh Hartnett. This was like in 2002, 2003. And we offered him like five parts. Finally, Boaz found this script called Michael Strogoff, which is based on a very little-known Jules Verne book. And we offered it to Josh. And Ari Emanuel got on the phone with me, and he said, Josh is not doing this kind of stuff. This is when Josh had just done Pearl Harbor, and he was being offered $150 million to do Batman. He's not going to go work for Avi Lerner. And I said to Ari, I said, listen, Ari, Avi wants to make a movie with Josh Hartnett. Is there anything you've got sitting on your desk that Josh wants to do? And I think Ari probably made one of the biggest mistakes he ever made of his life, thought that Avi Lerner would never make an art movie with Josh Hartnett, and he had this script that Josh was begging everybody to do. And he gave it to me, and he said, yeah, this is the script Josh wants to do. Ha, 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 And we all read it. And it was actually a really good script. It was written by Ronald Bass, who wrote Rain Man. And Steven Spielberg was originally supposed to direct it. It's a movie called Mozart and the Whale. And it was developed over at DreamWorks. And Steven Spielberg chose not to make it because the person who the book's about slapped the messenger in the face when they delivered the check to buy the rights. And this was, she was a crazy lunatic. She's gone now, unfortunately. She passed away. But that, you know, Spielberg wanted to have nothing to do with that. So they eventually put the thing into turnaround. And we bought it out of turnaround. And, you know, I'm like trying to get Ari Emanuel on the phone for the next month. And he's not taking my calls because he doesn't want Josh to make this little tiny art movie when he can go do Superman. And we eventually found Josh from a way other than Ari. And I told Avi, I said, Avi, I've got this Josh Hartnett movie. Yeah, right. You have a Josh Hartnett movie. You lie. I said, Avi, be at the Chateau Marmont tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Josh will be there. And Josh was there, and Avi was like, and we got Josh Hartnett for, I can't even say the price because it was so low. I'm not allowed to say the price, even though it's 17 years ago. And the movie got greenlit. Now, I had known Jim from the late 90s. Jim and I met, we had a mutual friend named Ted Niccolo. And Jim had always wanted to produce. So Jim, we did this movie in India that Ted Niccolo directed that we hired Jim to be the lead actor on called In the Shadow of the Cobra. It was him and Sean Young. And Rutger Hauer played the bad guy. That was the fourth or fifth movie I produced. And Jim and I became friends, and we said we were going to work together. Now, I knew that Joanne was a big manager.
So the very first film that I produced, 1992, 93, was The Last Supper. Cameron Diaz and Mark Harmon and Bill Paxton.
One of my clients.
And written by Dan Rosen. At the premiere, I turn around, I see this gal, Joanne Colonna. I'm like, Joanne? And she's like, Ralph? She was my first real girlfriend in life.
Aww.
Sixth, seventh, and eighth grade.
Cute.
Yeah. And she was with, who was she with at the time? Brosine? No, she wasn't Brosine at the time. She was with Paradigm at the time, I think.
No, she had just become a manager. She had just switched, but it wasn't Brosine. It was before she went to Michael Eisner's, not my Michael Ovitz's company.
So anyway, she's there because she represented a bunch of people in my film. It's her husband, Jim, she introduced me to, is how I met Frank.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I know Jim, and I call Jim up, and I say, Jim, I know you want to produce. I've got this movie that looks like it's going to go. Come and be my partner on it. And he said, okay, because he was basically given the gift.
Right.
Right. And it was, you know, I'm thinking in the back of my head that this is going to pay off because he's got connections to talent.
Right.
My weakness is talent. But I have connections to the business people. So we produced Mozart and the Whale together. We shot it in Spokane. Then about 6 months later, he came to me and he said, Joanne's got this Brendan Fraser project that they're having trouble getting going. You think you can get Avi to finance it? Brendan Fraser, sure, no problem. All you got to do is have an actor with Avi and the money comes.
Oh my God.
That was the second movie. Then we did Mad Money, was the third movie. And that was when I met Jay.
I like Mad Money. Never saw Mozart and the Whale. How did Mozart and the Whale do?
Mozart and the Whale was a really good. It got into a bunch of film festivals, and it just missed getting it to Sundance. And that was back in the days when Sundance really meant something.
Was when it was really an independent film festival.
Yeah, no. If you would have gotten into Sundance, you would have gotten a big deal. You know,
right.
But it just missed getting into Sundance. It was actually a really good movie. Josh was great in it. Great. I mean, he was phenomenal. And the lead was played by Radha Mitchell, and Radha was really good. And it's basically, it was the story of two, it's a true story about two people with Asperger's syndrome, which is one of the most mildest forms of autism.
Right.
How they meet and how the autism causes them to keep fighting and breaking up and getting back together. And it was kind of like a romantic comedy, but it was a serious with serious undertones. And Ron did a great job on the script. And we hired an Academy Award nominated director out of Norway, a guy named Petter Ness.
Right. You know,
wow.
Not that it's analogous, but first of all, it's a big budget film and it's not a love story. But The Accountant with Ben Affleck, what I loved about that film was it wasn't a movie about autism. It could have, they could have gotten really preachy and made it about autism. It just happened to be a character who had autism, and I just love they kept it that way.
If you've never seen Mozart and the Whale, you should see it because it really is a good movie.
Right. I'll see it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I didn't see it. Sounds great.
So you're still working today?
Yeah, I've got movie, one of the movies I'm involved with. I can't call myself producer because I'm not a producer on it, but I'm one of the people involved with putting together Reagan.
Oh, really?
That's really cool.
That is really awesome. Is that the one, Dennis Quaid?
Dennis Quaid, plays Reagan. Penelope Ann Miller plays Nancy. And it's produced by a guy named Mark Joseph and John Sullivan. And I've been involved with them on it for about 8-9 years.
That's a long time.
We are doing the final reshoots, or the final photography. It's not really reshoots. It's additional photography. We're doing that in July. I've seen a cut already. It's going to be a good movie.
That's awesome.
Very good.
It's a little bit political.
What do you think?
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's not too many. Let's just put it this way. There's not too many liberals involved in this movie.
Well, there you go. You know what I concerns me a little bit, just as someone that used to really enjoy the movies, is we've gotten away from independent writers. I mean, everything's based on a book, or everything's a franchise, or now it's comic book.
Oh, for sure.
The Mean Streets, you know, you're not going to see that again, or at least I don't think so. The Rosemary's Baby, you know.
There's a lot of really good spec scripts out there, but they're hard to put together.
Correct.
I mean, I just bought a book with Nick Vallelonga, who did Green Book, who's a good friend of mine.
He comes up to the
club. Yes, he
comes
does.
Up to Grand Havana Room.
Yeah.
Nick's got two Oscars on his.
Nick is great.
He's got two Oscars sitting on his mantle, two Golden Globes sitting on his mantle. And him and I found this book, I guess it was about a year before he did Green Book, called The Reunion, written by a guy named Dan Walsh. That's a Christian book about a Vietnam vet who has disappeared and fallen off the face of the earth after Vietnam. And a reporter is hired by three Vietnam vets to find this guy because this guy saved their life during the war. And eventually he finds him, and the climax of the movie is the reunion. And we bought the book. Nick wrote the script. Then Green Book got greenlit. And Nick had 2 years of that. That was like a 2-year journey. That's probably one of the best journeys in Hollywood that I've actually known people involved with. Right. And now we're out trying to finance Green Book, finance the reunion.
Christian movie, so you have to go after people like Kevin Sorbo and things like that?
No, this is a...
It's, you're laughing. I'm telling you, the Christian
movies...
I'm
sure movies, it helps.
Oh, it's Kevin Sorbo, yeah. The guy from...
Dukes of Hazzard. And Kirk Cameron.
Kirk Cameron.
John Schneider.
But this is like not that kind of movie. This is, it is a faith-based movie, so I can't say it's not a faith-based movie. But it's more about the relationship between the guy and his estranged family and the estranged vets that he went through the war with.
That's so awesome.
like coming home?
Yeah, but not anti-war.
Right. You know who's running... Roma Downey is running Mark Burnett's faith-based...
Yeah, no. MGM almost financed
it. Right.
I mean, we came really close to getting a deal with MGM.
Oh, not too bad.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that's
great.
That's
the one I want to do next.
That one?
Yeah. Because it's a good story. And... It's a real tearjerker.
What was the book's name?
The Reunion.
The Reunion.
The Reunion by Dan Walsh, Walsh. He's a very well-known faith-based writer.
Did he write something on the Vatican years ago?
No, only fiction.
Only fiction?
Only Christian fiction.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I was in a, they say it's like the longest going play in the Valley because I went to Playhouse West for like 6 years, but it's a Vietnam play called Welcome Home Soldier. And they were all original stories and monologue driven play that was based off of all the vets. So they would actually come to the show and we would perform their stories for them.
You know,
it was very therapeutic. I have a very like close tie to the vet community.
I get that, but that would seem... much more relevant to my generation, the Vietnam, and your generation, I would think, would come up with the Iraq War, Afghanistan War.
No, but it started with so like James Franco and Jim Perrick were like the students of the time, but it was Playhouse West, so they wrote this play for your generation. Right. And then, like, the younger kids kept doing it and doing it over and over again.
We went to Afghanistan the first time. You were 10.
Yeah.
And now you're not 10.
No, I'm not. I remember 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were born in the 90s?
I was born 1990. Hey. Yeah. I know. It's cool. It's really cool. It's a good time in my life. Yeah. It just that's why they say it's the longest going play, though.
Right.
But, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it allowed me to learn about it in a different way. Of course, I have friends that have served that are my age
right.
that have gone to Afghanistan. I have a lot of them in the theater company that are actually vets. But obviously Vietnam is a very different thing. A draft was crazy. I couldn't imagine having a draft. So like that's pretty insane. And talking
comes in. Did you have to register for the draft?
They make you do something, but it's not.
Yeah,
no.
Women have to register too.
I don't think when she was going.
But it's like weird. It wasn't like a real draft. It's like
no, it's not a draft. You fill out a form and mail it in, and then if there's a draft, they have you.
Sure, but I mean, just there hasn't been one, you know. So it's like I couldn't imagine actually going to, because I talked to actual people who had to go, or like people. It's insane. It's crazy. My grandpa, both my like they're all the men in my family have served.
They didn't have one when I was in high school either. So it's just
yeah.
But we had to register.
We had to register.
I remember Casey did
the registration. The draft ended in 75.
Correct.
And then when Carter was president, towards the end of Carter's presidency, they reinstigated the registration.
Right.
So we had to register like when we were 18, which would have been like, in my case, 1980. And you know,
we had to register our senior year in high school, no matter what age you were.
Yeah, right. It was like something like that. I remember it was my younger brother had to fill something out. I never had to.
No, women didn't have to because women were never drafted.
I mean, you would tell me as a person
Sissies.
That grew up with this kind, you know, with the life that I understand and telling me the draft would be like, that's why would you make anyone do that, you know? But then it's insane is all I'm saying. It's crazy.
Most countries still have a draft.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you have to have some level of defense.
Israel's not even a draft.
No,
it's mandatory.
I have a lot of friends that live there that had to serve.
Yeah. Do you know an actor named Tom, I think it's Omar, he does a lot of commercials, said something, and it was really pretty profound, and he said it on Memorial Day. He said, back in the 40s, 15, 16-year-old kids would lie about their age so they can go fight. Today we have 25-year-old kids that get triggered by certain words.
Sure.
It is a totally different world today.
Very different.
Also, in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, when we grew up, there was a thing called a bully that you had to learn how to deal with.
Right.
And if you didn't learn how to deal with, you didn't have a good time in high school.
You had
three
jumped.
Choices. Run fast, take a good shot, or hit hard.
Oh, I hit hard. and then I got pummeled. That was like what ended up happening to me.
Now, a bully gets kicked out of school because the parents have the control that don't touch my kid.
Actually, the bullies don't get kicked out of school.
Yeah.
That's the problem. But what they're doing is they're protected. And it gets worse.
Well, the parents are like, did you just have to do something?
No.
Oh, okay.
He's just thinking about his life choices.
That's all I do. I was thinking about my life choices.
As he turns around.
I was never the bully. I actually protected the nerds from the bullies because...
That's why I got jumped, Ralph. If you want to be real, in school, my little brother, because he didn't learn how to... He had trouble speaking, and he basically had to go to speech therapy until he was like 6, 7, 8. And these guys would make fun of him. And I was the loud, outspoken little kid who was like, leave my little brother alone. And it was just like 8 kids just jumped on top of me.
So listen, if your kids are out there getting bullied, take them to the Pineapple Hill Saloon for lunch. They can get a tuna melt. They can get french fries. They even have a Slurpee machine in there. You could ask for it with alcohol or not, depending on how bullied your son or daughter was. But please support the Pineapple Hill Saloon. It is in Sherman Oaks. It is on Van Nuys Boulevard, right behind the In-N-Out Burger.
It's got really good wings,
too. How is that for
too.
A plug, huh?
It's
getting
true.
The bullies
is that
in there.
The lady that got mad because the studio was allowed to make the movie and
yes.
she wasn't allowed to open?
What happened was the day they closed her outdoor patio, it was a TV show, opened up their craft service tent for 150 people, literally right next to her tent, and she lost it. And quite honestly, I believe her video that went viral spearheaded the Remove Newsom campaign, which probably won't work, but it lit a fire under a lot of people. Because how do you attack a single mom like that and you open up 150 table for a TV show that no one ever watches?
Does she have a second one, too? Because I remember there used to be one on Tampa.
No, there's one on Reseda called the Sugar Mill.
Sugar Mill.
The original owner owned both of them, and they're built identical. If you walk into one,
and I think they used to be all called the Pineapple Hill Saloon back then.
It could have been. I don't know.
And I'm going back to the 90s.
I don't recall, but this one's Pineapple Hill. That one's Sugar Mill, and the interiors are identical. It's pretty wild. So the questions I like to ask, Frank, who's the biggest pain in the ass you had to work with?
This is the question I can answer.
Oh, yes, you can. Come on. Sean Young almost climbed the fences at Paramount to be Batwoman.
Sean Young I had no problem with on the first movie. The second movie I did with her, there was an issue. But we've become really close friends.
I know Sean very well.
She's pretty much, I don't want to say retired, but I think she lives in Austin now. Either Austin or New York.
She was in Rye Brook for a while, and then she moved from Rye, and I'm not sure where she moved to.
Well, when I worked with her in 1997 and in 2001. In fact, the second movie I did with her was an Indian movie that we were all flying back on 9/11, and we all got stuck.
Wow.
We didn't get to come back. We got stuck out of the country for 3 or 4 days. She was living in Sedona then. Then she left Sedona and moved to Santa Monica.
Right.
And after Santa Monica, that was when I think she moved to New York.
She moved to Rye, yeah.
Right, and I think she's in Austin now.
She may be. Sure. You know what's interesting is, I don't know if you follow her, but she's become anti-government.
She's really Republican.
I don't think she is. I think she is just anti-government.
Oh, no, she's really Republican. In fact, she was like 100% pro-Trump.
Yes, but here's the thing. People conflate that all the time. I am 100% pro-Trump. I am not 100% pro-Republican.
That's crazy.
I am, because Trump isn't a Republican.
Yeah.
By the way,
he was. He's not a traditional... Excuse me. He's not a traditional Republican at all.
He's not a traditional politician either.
No, not a traditional politician. And by the way, I think he could have won on the Democrat ticket if he chose to run on that one if it wasn't Hillary.
I mean...
No, he could have beat Hillary in
the Democratic primary? I mean, because he was not. He
was speaking to a whole branch of the population that the politicians don't care about.
Yeah. He spoke to this, which I call your party, the 70s Democrats of... America First, anti-communist. He's also kind of pro-union, but not pro-government union. So he's all in favor of the steel workers and the car workers.
He's in favor of the workers, but not the unions.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think he's
kind of similar to Reagan with that part of him, whereas Reagan hated the unions, but Reagan believed in the workers.
So I think I know Reagan was definitely against government unions, as I am, because... Who do they negotiate with? They negotiate with themselves. So, of course, they're getting pay raises. A teacher's union, for example, spend all of their PAC money, all of their donations to elect politicians who will give them raises. It doesn't work that way, you know. But if you're a steel worker and you want a raise, the union has to then negotiate with a company that actually makes money. Government doesn't make money. So there's a huge difference. So I don't have an issue with steel workers or electricians or plumbers, but I have a bigger issue with teachers' unions, not teachers before I get slammed.
I have major issues with the
WGA. Yeah, I was going to say my brother's a teacher, Ralph.
SAG, the Teamsters.
I'm in SAG.
Well, once again, who are they negotiating with, you know? I will tell you, SAG is probably the most poorly run guild I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, they messed up my paperwork when AFTRA and SAG merged. They couldn't find anything. Well, and I've been in AFTRA since I was like 5.
That was part of the problem it really destroyed the health pensions part of it. There's just too many members. It just really hurt them.
The first mistake they made was merging with the Screen Extras Guild.
I don't remember that.
I didn't even know that happened. That's
all of a sudden SAG went from like 50,000 members to 110,000 members overnight. Because they got all these extras that work maybe 5 days a year. And they had to come up with rules to keep their extras employed. SAG is like, you can't represent people that make $50 million a year and represent people that make $5,000 a year. There's nothing similar.
Right. Well, that's why they're going after, they want to represent now like TikTok influencers and Instagram influencers. They want part of the money on the advertising.
I don't want them in the union. I don't want them to even be represented in general. I just
this is your generation's sweetheart. So
I know it's just such trash. It's not entertainment,
it's not
dude.
It's not her. Our generation.
It's younger than me. That's it is. True. It's like yeah, they're like they're like my little cousin who's in high school.
Little? She's not very tall.
She's little. Yeah, she's small. She's a little tiny person. Yeah, no, I don't. I have a huge problem with it. In general, I had some audition that I got a call back for that was like to be a social media influencer for this new thing and. Whatever. I was just like, I had a real long think to myself. And I was like, that's not why I'm an actor.
Well, look, I'm getting fed up with the whole wokeism thing. It's just killing comedy.
Sure, know? Sure. I mean, there's a lot of things that wouldn't fly back in the day that I find very funny.
Right.
Robin Williams, we talked about this before. I love the man.
All in the Family.
All yes. in the Family.
Sanford and Son.
Any show from the 70s.
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles is so good.
Even Friends.
Yeah.
Oh, there was an entire article.
People hate South Park. That's like a whole thing, too. These kids that find South Park offensive. I'm like, that's the whole point of the show.
Exactly.
You're supposed to be offended.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I can tell you, it was maybe 8 years ago. No, it was probably a little bit longer. 9 years ago, I used to do another radio show way back called Historic Holes. And on the show is when the Asian airline went missing. And so we used to have someone in the studio booth that would tweet for us when somebody said something funny. And I said, Asian airline goes missing. I said, who would get on an Asian airline? I won't even get in an Uber with an Asian driver. It was a throwaway line, right?
Sure, sure.
They got so much. The Twitter feed went nuts.
And really?
They were like demanding my apology. And the owner of that studio, this guy Mike Zinner, who I really don't like, but anyway,
yeah.
he's like, dude, he goes, you know, we're getting a lot of hate. He goes, could you just say a little apology?
Yeah.
I'm like, what? He goes, I'd appreciate it. I'm like, really? So I ended my next show with, so I guess I said something that offended a lot of people, and therefore I would like to apologize and let everybody know that there was no happy ending on Asian Air.
Wow. Well, Ralph.
It wasn't Asian Air, it was Malaysian Air, wasn't it?
Whatever.
He's correcting your joke.
Because Asiana is like one of the best airlines in the world.
Whatever it was just like, I'm like, there's no happy ending. And I could see Mike Zinner's face just going,
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of sad, too. 90% of the time they go and they dig up, like people dig up old jokes that people told when the bar was set at a certain place. And, like, expect those people from, like, 10 years ago, a joke that they made to apologize for that joke. And I'm just like, hey, that was 10 years ago, and the bar was at a different place than it is now. They're not telling that same joke now.
There should be no bar. We have a freedom of speech.
Sure, but it does move. It has.
It shouldn't move.
It shouldn't move, but it does.
I mean, that's what happened to Nick Vallelonga. Do you know, remember the whole story?
No.
When they were doing the Academy, the Oscar blanking on that word now too. They were doing the promotion for the Oscars.
Right.
Somebody found a tweet that Nick sent out like when Twitter started. That basically said Trump was right about the dancing in the streets after 9/11.
Right.
And here's the CBS video.
I posted that same video.
Okay. All of a sudden, Nick was being told, you can't go to this ceremony, you can't go to this ceremony, don't walk this red carpet. So he was like shut out from everything because of a tweet he had done like 7 years sooner that didn't even take a position. He just said, Trump is right.
About
people
this
were dancing yeah. on the streets after 9/11.
Right. Yeah, that's in Fort Lee, New Jersey, I think it was.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But that's the thing is like for me, it's like, yes, I agree there shouldn't be a bar, but there is one. So it's like ignoring the fact that there is one. It's just like, he's not saying that thing now in this moment. We're going back however many years to find a thing that we can get mad about now. It's like, why? What are we doing with our time?
Whatever happened to sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will never harm us.
Sure. I mean, yeah, there's like, just too much.
But his tweets were mean. Yeah,
I got to pick and choose battles and things I get upset about. If someone's going to say something shitty to my face right now, yeah, I'll get mad at you.
So... you know the film that you helped, my little short film you helped me produce?
Yes.
That was originally a one-act stage play. And during rehearsals, we're reading it, and there's a line that one of the actor had to say, even asked me to take it out of the film, but it was, I insisted it stay in at the play. So during rehearsals, where the line is, he says, a man marrying another man, he says, what's next? Men will marry horses? And then what? They'll marry black horses?
Oh, Jesus Christ, bro.
That's a funny line. And so this one gal says, oh, my God, you have to take that out. That's racist. I'm like, okay, first of all, I've been making fun of Italians for the last 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a problem with that. And now
I'm stereotyping Italians.
And now I'm making fun of a horse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like...
okay, we were in post-production on Mad Money.
I knew I'd get something out of it.
And there was... we went to a bunch of test screenings, and there was one line that was getting, like, the biggest laugh. Every test screening, this line was getting the biggest laugh. Now, I don't know if you remember the scene where... you saw the movie, uh-huh. Right? Did you see the movie?
I didn't.
You should see Mad Money. It's a good movie.
There's a scene where Ted Danson is yelling at Diane Keaton. You know, what? We can't do this anymore. What's going on? This is getting ridiculous. You have to stop. You can't keep stealing. We're all going to go to jail, blah, blah, blah. We got this happening. We got this happening. We got this happening. And then the next line is, and we got the black people making out in the closet. That line got incredibly big laughs. I mean... it was like the audience cracked up. The premise was that the scene before that, Diane Keaton had opened her closet doors and Queen Latifah is kissing her boyfriend in the bathroom, in the closet. And then she goes, oh, excuse me, and closes the doors. That didn't really get the laugh. That's still in the movie.
Right.
But the black people making out in the bathroom, we were ordered by the domestic distributor to take that line out.
Wow.
And this was 2007. This is 13 years ago, 14
wow.
years ago.
Wow. Look, All in the Family, which is my favorite television show of all time, was the first show, and maybe the only show, that aired with a disclaimer.
Now, there's been a lot since then.
Since then, but that was the first show then.
There's a
the
lot,
first,
yeah. There's
it
a
was
lot
the
of
first show to
happening.
Air with a disclaimer.
That was the first show that had the N-word in it.
Yes.
And Sanford and Son had the N-word in it a lot.
Right.
And if you can get the original... tapes, you can watch it with the N-word, but if you buy like the tapes now, the DVDs now, all that's cut out.
Did you ever watch Sanford and Son?
No.
This is one of the funniest shows ever.
Red Fox.
The entire show is race humor.
Okay.
He plays a black guy
who owns a junkyard.
With his son in Watts, and they own a junkyard, and they've got the Puerto Rican next door neighbor. They've got the Jewish businessman down the street. And the whole movie is making fun of races. The whole, I mean, not movie, the right. whole TV show is making fun of races. From the first episode to the last episode, it's all race humor.
It is one of the funniest shows. He is, I never saw his stand up, but I would have loved to have seen his stand up.
Filthy.
Oh, I'm sure he was blue.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, was he filthy. I saw him at the Sahara. He actually had to work at the Sahara for like 7 years straight to pay off his gambling debts.
Wow.
That I know. I knew he was a big gambler. Wow.
So he was like basically working for minimum wage because they had to pay him something just to pay off his gambling.
I would have loved to have been back in Vegas in those days with Sinatra and Dean Martin. A friend of mine sent me this YouTube clip, and I think it was like probably the Sands where Sinatra used to do a weekly show. And it was always him, Joey Bishop, and Sammy Davis
that
Jr.
That was before we were born.
Okay, the 50s then.
That was from 1960 to 1962 through 63.
I was born in 63, so.
I was born in 62.
So forget which one of the Rat Pack couldn't make the show. It may have been Peter Lawford. So Sinatra calls Johnny Carson to come down to Vegas to do the show. And Johnny comes out on stage. He goes, I know Peter Lawford usually does the opening, but he couldn't make it tonight, so Frank asked me to come down, which was quite interesting because I said to Frank, I said, Frank, a Thursday night, I'm not sure if you know it, but I do a little TV show back in Hollywood called The Johnny Carson Show on Thursday nights. And Frank says, yeah, and I do a show in Vegas on Thursday nights. So here I am, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Because Sinatra ruled the roost back then.
That was, you know, I think that was before the Sands had their own building.
Okay.
The Sands was originally a three-story hotel with two wings, and each of the wings was named after a famous race course. Like, there was the Aqueduct Ring, the Belmont Ring.
That's pretty cool.
The Downs Wing.
Where do you, I don't think I've ever asked this. So, do you hang out with any of, like, the up-and-coming young actors? Because I did, like, that's how I met you. Didn't meet your mom, but that's how your mom and I ran the same circles. Where do you guys go?
You mean, like, out?
Yeah.
Well, see, I'm an old person, so I don't really go out. I mean,
it's different now.
It is. Growing up, well, I grew up with a lot of child actors, like, for sure. Shia LaBeouf was, like, my older brother's best friend. And, like, I grew up in, like, Kristen Stewart's, like, stepbrother was, like, one of my really good friends. But it's the Valley, so it was, like, house parties and things. And then as you got older, I don't really go out, so that's, like, another thing. They go to the Chateau, like, you know.
We used to do Chateau Lamont. We used to do
they still
Whiskey.
Do that.
We used to do Rainbow.
I mean, the Rainbow's still older. I go there because I know the Magliari family. But I wouldn't say I'm very cool or hip to ask these questions to, because I'm definitely, like, I go to concerts, I go to bookstores, and that's, like, what Victoria does, and she reads.
You go to bookstores.
And I study, yes. The ones that still exist.
There's one on Sunset, I think.
There is. There's actually, and there's.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last bookstore downtown. I don't know if it's still there. That's kind of, I loved that place. Yeah. I mean, I'm in a theater with people. So 90% of the time I'm just inside of a theater.
Because you don't really hear of, like, my generation was the Brat Pack. You just don't hear about. You had a little bit with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kevin Connolly and Jeremy.
Sure, and there's
Sisto.
They're party central things, right? So there's, like, people go to clubs, and I don't like clubs. I don't like the music. I don't like the scene so much. So that exists, and I have friends that are party people that are, you know, hang out with high rollers that go to, like, these clubs and spend, like, $20,000, and, like, these girls that I know that work at them. And that would be a very different scene in my mind than people who are creative individuals in the industry.
It just doesn't seem like there's an every night place. Like, when I moved out here in the 90s, every night of the week, you know, it was in the Roxbury.
Yeah, there. I wouldn't say that there is, like, a place like that.
Right.
It's more of events.
I wonder if that's to do with social media.
There was Carlos and Charlie's.
Carlos and Charlie's was another great hangout.
Monday nights at, what was the name of the restaurant? It was the corner on the Robertson and Melrose.
Well, there was a couple. There was Morton's.
I think it's Morton's.
There was Ciccone's.
Now it's Ciccone's.
Right.
What was it back in the 80s?
Was it at Morton's?
I think it was Morton's.
Right. And across the street,
Monday
you had Tia Carrera's place on the other corner.
That's also my mom's friend.
You mean Annie Samaha's place.
Well, she said it was her.
That's also my mom's other.
I used to
what was that?
She was also my mom's really good friend, and then she ended up dating my dad.
Frank, I'm not saying it because she's my co-host. Her mom made me the most interesting woman I've ever met in my entire life.
She's
two
cool.
Coasts, four different countries, two different continents, three different continents. Your mom.
She's pretty cool.
How she doesn't have a book or someone hasn't done an entire docu-series on your mom?
Someone should. I told her we should do it.
Her two grandfathers are Kenny Rogers Jr. and
Kenny
Rogers
Jr.
and Lee Greenwood.
Those are your actual grandfathers?
Yeah. Yeah.
So your mom was raised in country music.
Country and 80s. They're basically the same thing. Because my mom also dated, like, 80s hair metal guys.
She was engaged to Janie Lane from Warrant.
And then she dated the guitar player from the Scorpions for 10 years.
She must
Rudolph Schenker.
Like, yeah. Around here back in the Guns N' Roses days.
Yes, she tells
like
the whole
over at Cantor's, and
she tells a whole story about how she let Axl Rose hold me as a baby because he said he was good with kids, and I started screaming.
And then what's his name from Van Halen tried to give you a drink at the Troubadour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And I sent it back.
David Lee Roth.
I sent it straight back.
Was it David Lee Roth or was it Sammy Hagar?
No, it was David Lee Roth. I think he asked my mom if she wanted something to drink before when she was, like, underage. And she was like, yeah, I don't drink. And then she asked for Long Island iced tea because she didn't know.
So we have 30 seconds left. Frankie, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
No problem.
No, a guy from Long Island making it in the business. I got to love that. Victoria, anything you want to close with?
Go to the Pineapple Hill Saloon and get chicken wings, guys. They're really good.
By the way, what? And love Bowie because that's her favorite.
It's true.
Little secret before we tune out. Victoria's two big crushes, David Bowie, Edgar Allan Poe.
It's
and
true.
And this is OK Boomer.
I was like, who are you going to say, Ralph?
You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.